Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, iPhone 10. How about the Series 3 Apple Watch? NVIDIA Whisper Mode tested, Threadripper coolers on AM4 CPUs, a new Platinum PSU, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 432, recorded September 14th, 2017. A big week for Apple? This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware was brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twitch and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, build a WordPress.com website, and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/twitch. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most delightful, and occasionally most expensive hardware news on the planet. We love mobile, we love desktop, we really love desktop, and today we're all about the Apple universe, which, amusingly enough, brings me to our co-host for this week, Mr. Alan Malventano, storage maven at large from PCPer.com. How are you doing, sir?
What does the storage maven have to do with the Apple phone stuff?
Well, you're here, and we have a ton of Apple news this week because of the big Apple launch. Practically everything going for sale on September 15th. Are you hitting refresh every minute of your life for the next 12, 15 hours until the purchasing opportunities come up on the Apple website? Or are you going to manage?
No, I'm not going to. I'm on the East Coast, so it just means I set the alarm clock for like 2:45 in the morning. You know, is tonight, actually, I think, because the pre-orders for at least the 8. Well, what is it? Pre-orders for the 8 and the 8 Plus and I think the watch?
Pretty much everything but the 10.
Everything but the 10 is tonight at 3 a.m. on this coast and midnight over there. You guys don't have to like pull an all-nighter.
Hopefully
fortunately.
Not. Stranger things will have happened. iPhone 10 or X, $999, no price. That's for the 64 gigabyte version. No price yet for the 256 gigabyte version. They are very proud of the Super Retina HD display. And Super Retina is essentially Apple for a 5.8-inch diagonal OLED multi-touch display. It's HDR, 458 pixels per inch. It's a 2436 by 1125 pixel resolution. Kind of amusing that they're essentially supporting all the HDR standards. The A11 Bionic chip with 64-bit architecture, a neural engine. We'll talk about what that's for in a second. The embedded M11 motion coprocessor. The cameras are still 12 megapixels, which I'm not particularly surprised at. F1.8 is the aperture on the wide angle. F2.4 for the telephoto lens on that. So a tiny, tiny little upgrade on the telephoto lens for that. Optical zoom. Portrait mode, portrait lighting in beta. They are very excited about the portrait lighting or the idea that you'd be able to manipulate the lighting for your portraits in post. Six-element lens, quad LED, true-tone flash with slow sync. Some pretty ridiculous video recording opportunities. 4K video recording at 24 frames per second, 30 frames per second, or 60 frames per second. And then some slow-mo video support for 1080p at up to 240 frames per second. Really, though, this phone is about two things. The fit and finish, right? They've eliminated the home button. The screen goes edge to edge except for the little chunk at the top for the sensors and the camera on the screen. And they're really excited about the fit and finish on the enclosure, the glass back. They finally introduced wireless charging, much to the shock of everyone, I think, listening using the Qi wireless charging system. Something they didn't really discuss in the demo is that both this and the iPhone, or the show, was that both this and the iPhone 8 will be doing fast charging. So a 50% charge in 30 minutes of charging. Again, non-proprietary wireless charging, although they kind of do something a little different with that later on. And face recognition, right? Because you're no longer doing the fingerprints. And people were mixed. People were either really, really excited about this or really, really freaked out about this. neural network is essentially so that it can take a picture of your face. There's an IR camera in the face-facing camera on that one. It's going to create this giant collection of points off of your face, and it will use that to unlock your phone. And
basically a 3D picture of your face, right?
Mm-hmm. So, lots of freak out about this, like, oh, the police will be able to aim the camera at my face. Oh, how secure will this be? And
I had that same question. There's actually an answer for that. Do you know what the answer is? Ken had the answer. I didn't even know it was a thing. No, so it's in iOS 11. You hit the power button, I guess. Standby button.
Essentially, hit the power button 5 times. Yeah,
you hit that button 5 times and it just completely like wipes all that stuff out. So, and that also applies even to the older iPhones for if you didn't want them to be able to use your finger.
Right.
If you just hit the power button 5 times. So if you're, which you can kind of do even covertly, if you're just going to put your hand in your pocket to get the phone, you could literally hit that button 5 times before you even had the phone out of your pocket. Right. So, airport security, you're worried about somebody rifling through your phone or whatever. You could really just revert it almost immediately back to the password required state.
I think I'll probably leave it on the password required state. Ken's got a point. A lot of people, may argue whether or not that is particularly safe or safe enough. We're not going to get into the sort of EFF side of things. The thing that kind of blew my mind was how excited they were about the Animojis and the animated Snapchat kind of masks and stuff. But, they map 30,000 points on your face, and then they can take an emoji. They're very excited about the poop emoji and then animate it with facial expressions. That was a moment. The cameras on this look to be outstanding. 12 megapixels more than enough for most typical uses. The video cameras looks really good. I'm very curious to see what people do with it in the real world. I'm very curious to get hands on it. It looks gorgeous. As any Apple product should, and it's expensive, $1,000 again for the 64 GB version, and nobody knows how expensive the 256 GB version is going to be. The iPhone 8, which you might think of as being the iPhone 7S, also with the glass, surgical stainless steel on the iPhone 10, iPhone 8, 4.7-inch display. Non-OLED, standard LED 4.7-inch display, the iPhone 8 Plus, a 5.5-inch display. The home button remains, the Touch ID remains. Basically, you get the super cool camera, which is almost all of the iPhone 10 camera on the iPhone 8 Plus, the dual camera arrangement. Can I say one thing before we go on? Because I want to go back.
What?
I was really irritated that the iPhone 10 still has a camera bump. Couldn't you have made it a little thicker and eliminated the camera bump?
I don't know that it sticks out further, but it's a larger diameter bump because they have the IS on both cameras now on the iPhone 10. To fit all that stuff in there, they had to make it bigger. If you're already committed to having the bump on the back anyway, right?
iPhone 8 gets the A11 Bionic chip, the neural engine, the embedded M11 motion coprocessor. The telephoto is f2.8 instead of f2.4. But beyond that, pretty similar performance capabilities between the two, which may make the iPhone 8 Plus a particular bargain for the photographers out there or people who want the latest in Apple technology in their cell phone camera. You're talking about $799 for the iPhone 8 Plus, $699 for the iPhone 8. And those are, again, the 64 GB versions. We don't have 256 GB version pricing. Good article. I was reading Vlad Savov over at The Verge. The iPhone 10 is the one phone where you'll really want to wait for the reviews. I like what he was getting to in the sense that there's a lot of changes here. The swipe based interface, the bezel-less screen, the wireless charging, face ID versus touch ID, how strong they're basically saying the glass back is the strongest, they say a lot of things. They're the strongest screen in a phone ever, and the glass back is super awesome and amazing, and it's backed with steel and puppies, and I'm only slightly mocking Apple's presentation. But, you know, it may be the hardest glass. It may be the most durable glass. But again, it's glass. And as somebody who, you know, completely trashed their first iPhone 6 in a matter of 3 days of ownership, you know, I'm a little nervous about that. The iPhone 10 is certainly outside of my cell phone budget at this point. You know, and it's $999, so it's a not inexpensive investment. You know, mentioned it earlier, iPhone 10 and iPhone 8 are going to charge to 50% in 30 minutes, which I think is an outstanding thing, along with the wireless. Apple TV gets 4K. It's really expensive. You know, if you're locked into the Apple ecosystem, no, I mean, as somebody who's owned every generation of Apple TV, you know, in no small part because I have been locked into Apple's ecosystem because I own a ton of their content. You know, it's great that they're doing 4K, $179 for 32 gigs of storage, $199 for 64 gigabytes of storage. You know, it's, you know, you're basically talking about the equivalent performance of an $89 or $99 Roku box. So there's a huge price premium on this. The flip side is they've done some what I think are pretty impressive content deals. They've got everybody but Disney on board for $20 4K movies, which is fantastic, right? Because if you start looking over at Vudu's 4K UHD movies, you're, you know, talking very often, you know, like $29.99 for a 4K UHD movie. There's not going to be any Atmos support on the Apple TV 4K, as far as we can tell. Their audio options aren't particularly sophisticated if you're a bleeding edge home theater enthusiast. But for the vast majority of people, it's going to have 4K UHD, HDR10, Dolby Vision, and what I hope turns out to be a ton of 4K content. And that could be kind of the Trojan horse for Apple, you know, catching back up to Roku in terms of installed units. I don't think it's going to happen given the number of TVs using the Roku's operating system. But it's I think it's a really smart thing for Apple. And Apple's, again, being aggressive on the 4K movie pricing, like $20. And they promise that, you know, all of your eligible HD movies that you own, they will automatically make 4K for free, which I thought was a really nice thing for them to do. So if you've got a 4K TV and you got a bunch of Apple content, this is looking, looks like it has a lot of potential. They put a white circle around the home button. Whether or not that circle is raised, and i.e. a textural feedback for your thumb in the darkness, or whether or not it's just a white circle, remains to be seen. I'm hoping to get into a store, and as soon as these are available for pre-order, hopefully they'll be in a store so you can play with them. I'm very curious about that because I didn't realize how many people were as frustrated as they are with the Apple remote. I found it frustrating for about a week, and then it wasn't an issue for me, but some friends of mine were just, you know, all they wanted out of the 4K announcement was a redesigned remote control because that was the most frustrating pain point.
I mean, you get used to the remote. I mean, it has like, you know, there's indentations in the buttons at least already. So you just know where the button is after, you know, like you just said, using it for a week or so, right? Mm-hmm. Like just kind of get used to it.
Apparently, you and I got used to it, but a lot of people didn't. I think the most impressive announcement was not the iPhone 10, but the Apple Watch Series 3. I'm really curious about this one, and I was kind of tweeting back and forth with Tom Merritt from, you know, from the news show. You know, I found the original Apple Watch to be one of the most frustrating tech purchases I've made in the last decade. Just in terms of the interface was messy, the options were difficult, having to have it linked to the phone. I just found it really, really frustrating. And that said, you know, Siri can now talk to you, which is not nearly as cool as the fact that you can now, you know, combine the Series 3 Apple Watch with your iPhone 6 or higher's cell phone number, and it will make calls and send texts with just your watch. You can see it right there on the screen if you're watching the video. That's really exciting to me. You'll be able to get weather without having your watch nearby. I think Apple was much more as excited as Apple was about the, you know, basically putting a cell modem inside of the Apple Watch Series 3. But they were really excited about you getting Apple Music and streaming 40 million songs from your wrist. you know, they were
which makes really sense, excited, you know, to be able to. That. I mean, you can do that already. But now you can do that away from your phone, right? So that's yeah. the whole, you know.
But it's like it was the amount of time.
But it's worth pointing out.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out, though, to do this away from your phone, you have to add another device, technically, even though it's, you know, this SIM that's supposed to be able to basically sort of pseudo clone your number from your phone. It's still using the same number, and which, by the way, is kind of a unique thing, right? Now you have a separate cellular device, which yeah. is using the same number, right? Like, that's not, like, how often have you ever seen that being a thing before? That's not
they
a
were
typical
a
thing
little...
you can even pull off.
They were a little vague on the cost of the data systems, how it's going to be integrated with your phone. They basically talked about, you know, the major carriers are going to support it.
They were vague, but we have some numbers, and it looks like it's pretty much going to be like $10 a month to add the watch, which I think is high for what it's going to do. Like, it's not as I wouldn't imagine the typical user of this device is going to always be away from their phone with it and just use it like instead of the phone. Right.
Well, given that given that a lot of the cell phone services are charging like $35, $25 to add an additional device, you know, it doesn't seem too bad. I mean, $429 for the GPS plus cellular version of the 42-millimeter phone at the entry level, $359 for the GPS only. I'm curious. The heart study they're working on, I think, is very interesting. AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile. You know, it looks much more functional than the original version.
I mean, even all that said, I'm actually looking, like, I have resisted getting an Apple Watch so far, and I'm thinking about doing it now. And if I did one now, I would probably either get like a discounted Series 2, right. You know, because the price is
so. But there's going to be
like
Series 3 and Series 1, and then they're going to sell out the Series 2. Like, the Series 2 is going to get phased out, so.
Right. Well, but I mean, even if I didn't get the Series 2, if I went for the Series 3, because I probably wouldn't even get the cellular version. Like, I'd probably just get the, you know, the only real advantage would be possibly a little bit better battery life, since I wouldn't be ever using it for cellular, and I would kind of assume maybe it has a larger battery in that model that didn't have the cell radio. Like, the same battery would be in both models, both of the newer models, presumably. And obviously it has a faster processor. But, like, if you look at all the other features, they're actually still strikingly similar all the way down the line, all the way back to Series 1. Like, you know, just... because we were curious, Ken hurried up yesterday and updated his, you know, since if you're on the beta track, you can get the iOS 11 master release is out now, and you can also update watches to the newest version, which I think is watchOS 4, mm-hmm. I think, for the watch. But even on his watch, which is, I think is a Series 2, like, it has all those same features they talked about at the keynote, all the additional heart rate monitoring stuff, where it tells you if you're, you know, what's your resting rate typically and all that. Although all that software, it looks like it carries across the whole line all the way back to the Series 1. So, wow. You know, it's really down to just, yeah, it's really down to just like you can get a cell radio and a slightly faster processor in the newest version. That's really it's down to.
The newer version, the cellular modem, and then the W2 processor is supposed to have significantly increased bandwidth and lower power consumption for Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. The barometer and altimeter. For me, I'm actually updating the operating system on my Series 1 watch again because, you know, it's basically been holding down paper on my desk for most of the last year. But
yeah, I know.
We will see. We will see. Yeah, it's true. You've seen it there.
I've seen that watch. I was like, hey, what are you doing with that watch, Patrick? And like, we had to like wake it from being dead before it would do anything because it had just been sitting on your desk and like completely died.
Oh my goodness. Everything can be pre-ordered on the 15th, shipping on the 22nd, except for the iPhone X, which is the pre-orders for that are going to start on October 27th. Just so you know. I get for me the most exciting thing on the list was really that Series 3 Apple Watch, which I did not expect.
Yeah.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and today over a million people use the amazing Ring Video Doorbell to help protect their homes. Ring knows home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there because you got a whole house, right? That's why they're extending that same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. Just like Ring's Video Doorbell, Floodlight Cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. HD video, two-way audio, lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. Get off my lawn, kid. With Ring's Floodlight Cam, when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what it is. When you're home or away, the Ring Floodlight Cam lets you keep an eye on your home. Ring Floodlight Cams offer the ultimate in home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. It's a nice feeling. Named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017, you can monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit. All the kits include a Ring Video Doorbell and your choice of either one, two, or three floodlight cams. Connect your Ring Video Doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. Just have it all sorted out. It's nice. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twitch. That's ring.com/TWICH, and we thank Ring for their support. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure there is a Ring Video Doorbell on the door of the office you're in right now, Ryan. Excuse me, Alex.
Technically there's two.
Really?
Yeah, we got two doors.
Ooh. You know, monitoring, so put one on all the doors.
Yeah, monitor all the doors.
And if you had any outside on the property, you could put the floodlight cams on.
That's true.
Just talk to Ryan about that. Tell me you don't feel secure and you want to feel more secure.
I have been thinking about getting one of those for my backyard at my house.
It'd be fun to put one to watch the chickens in our backyard so that if we heard the chicken disturbance in the night, we could fire up the siren and scare the raccoons away.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. AMD Radeon Technologies Group, Roger Kuduri, goes on sabbatical. Did Ryan talk about this on the podcast last night?
He did. And I mean, that's pretty much it. he went on a sabbatical. Yeah. There's kind of like some more disappointment in what the community has responded with in this than in the story itself, in my opinion, at least. Like, you know, because you have guys out there going, oh, he should have stepped down, or just people like venting whatever their frustration was with recent, you know, AMD GPU releases and trying to pin it all on one guy as if, like, you know, one person is in charge of every single moving part of a thing ever. But I digress. Went on sabbatical. Kind of working theory we have is that, you know, he's taking a break. He was probably cashing out too many like family brownie points from all the, you know, work he was doing on, right? Like, I would imagine there are plenty of nights where that guy was, yeah, he's probably burning the midnight oil a lot, right? In order to get Vega out the door, and now it's out. So we know, let the guy take a break.
He'll be back in December.
I would think he might try to come back in more of like a, like what he used to do, instead of being at such a high level, because, you know, you get burdened down with a bunch of other stuff when you're at that level. And if you were somebody that was like really technical and that sort of thing, it makes it tough to be able to do the thing that like you might have been the best at. So, you know, we'll see. Just gotta see what pans out with that.
Good to know.
Yep. Lisa Sue stepped in to take his place for the moment, just so we have said all that needs to be said there.
That should leave the group in good hands.
Yeah.
Ryan Trout wrote that one up on PCPer.com. Jeremy has a notification for everyone. Free Champions Pack for Quake Champions for free with AMD GPUs and CPUs. Ruby, the animated heroine ATI used in tech demos for years, has returned and is now playable in Quake Champions for those who claim their free key. So Ryzen 5 or 7 APU or an RX 560, 570, 580, you can claim the Champions Pack for Quake Champions for free. That would normally be a $40 retail. And if you purchase one of the products after August 22nd, you can get your key over at AMD Rewards. That's going to run until October 29th, or quote, until the keys run out. So if you're eligible, don't wait to score your free shiny. Another one from Jeremy was looking at the Threadripper cooler on an AM4 socket. That was interesting, right? Hard OCP went kind of nuts on this one. They put the XSPC RayStorm Threadripper water block on a Ryzen 7 1700X overclocked to 4 gigahertz, and apparently it made it perfectly with the AM4 processor. Quote, yeah, the performance, on the other hand, demonstrates the advantage of using coolers specifically designed for your processor, because if the physical CPU is located in a different place underneath the lid, the cooling may not be concentrated in the place it needs for the best performance. But
that's also true. Because the water block for Threadripper is going to have its finned areas. Like, you can actually kind of tell in the picture, and like one of the first pictures in that article, if you kind of like zoom in on that guy, you can tell that there's finned areas in four corners of the card, or of the cooler, right? So it's concentrating its cooling on the four corners where you would have the four Threadripper, well, two of the four Threadripper dies, right? If it was an Epic processor you had in there, it'd be all four of the active dies. But if you stick that on a CPU that has its cores more towards the center, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Now you have to conduct heat across, like diagonally across the copper, to get to the areas that are actually being cooled by the liquid. So, and that gave you, I think it was like a 3 degrees Celsius difference, almost 2 or 3 degrees Celsius. So, yeah, use the right tool for the job.
Oops. Please. We beseech you. My goodness. Ken got hands-on with NVIDIA's Whisper Mode. Quieter gaming for notebooks. That's the promise. What was the actual result of Whisper Mode?
So it depended on like which notebook. We tested a couple of notebooks with this. And the idea here is just it's like a profile through GeForce Experience, and it's able to go in and tweak settings in the game, game-specific settings, right? With the end goal being, let's reduce the power draw, and also let's try to keep the frame rates limited to a specific value, right? First order of business, there was a little bit of confusion in that thing. If you wanted to be able to, dial and mess with the dials yourself, GeForce Experience adjusts the game settings, but it does it in a very like black box kind of manner, right? You point it at a game, you say, do this, and it just like, it tweaks some things, right? But if you wanted to change the actual frame rate that the game was being limited to, you had to go into your GeForce driver settings, find the game in the list, go and tweak the stuff there. So still a little bit kind of cumbersome, right? Having to toggle back and forth between a couple of different pieces of software. But that aside, so tested two platforms. One of them was a GTX 1070 Max-Q laptop, and another one had a 1080. Now, we're not sure if it was down to just like fan curves or how the two different systems had operated in their each having a unique kind of thermal envelope there. Like maybe one could dissipate heat a little bit better than the other one, or more efficiently or less efficiently or whatnot, right? End result was we didn't see huge gains on the 1070 Max-Q design laptop, but if you went to the 1080 Max-Q design laptop, there's pretty large differences to be seen there. So if you're looking at decibels, which is what's on those charts there, Hitman, as an example, went from 48.5 decibels down to 36 decibels. And realize every time you drop by 6 decibels, that's half of the sound level. So, you're talking like fraction of the noise coming out of that game just by changing this mode, basically by just flipping a switch in GeForce Experience and just rerunning the game. And realize there is some of a performance hit, right? Because you're trying to run at a lower frame rate. But we're not really sure. Like, it isn't the kind of thing you'd expect everybody to want to jump on and do, but it's a handy feature to have if you have a laptop and you want to do gaming and you're in some sort of a quiet environment, right? Like, you want to fire up a game in a library at a school for some reason. Like, you just want to sit in the back corner and game with headphones on. You wouldn't want your laptop in the back corner sounding like a hairdryer while you're trying to do it. Right. So this can quiet it down. If you're living with some folks, like, you know, roommates or whatnot, and they're trying to sleep and you're in the same room or whatever, and you don't want to make a bunch of noise, you know, there's times for that where you'd want, you know, where you'd want to be gaming in a quieter environment, right? Yeah, and there you can see whisper mode off and on, like, differences in this case, like, what was that showing, actually, on that particular chart? Was that just power draw?
Possibly.
Not sure. Yeah, Metro Last Light on the ROG Zephyrus. Yeah, so basically, you're just looking at your power draw there, and the power draw got cut in half, right, on that particular platform, just by going into whisper mode. Again, you get a performance hit, right?
Right.
Your frame rate is gonna go down, but, you know, end result is much reduced heat output from the system and a very consistent frame time, which is an important thing to note, right? The frame time, which we measured by actually, like, monitoring, you know, outputting frames directly to a separate capture system and seeing exactly what was the frame time, it was probably the most consistent frame time we had ever seen. Like, it was literally just like a flat, solid line right across. So, and that means that even though you're at a lower frame rate, your experience should still be pretty good, right? You're not going to have your frame rates being inconsistent and kind of jumping around and getting kind of juddery performance there. So yeah, there you have it. Yeah. So just, you know, a feature you can use on mobile systems and, you know, especially with benefits to the Max-Q design systems, which are designed to kind of be running right at the limit of, like, what's the perfect match for your thermals versus your performance in the first place. So you can make those systems even quieter. So cool stuff.
Make everything more awesome and less loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good thing. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware brought to you by WordPress. Every day, millions of people go online to search for local businesses. Does your small business show up? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it easier for your customers to find you, connect with you, and hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website. You don't need prior experience. You don't need to hire someone to do it for you. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process. You choose from hundreds of beautiful designs. You boost your visibility with built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. You can activate other WordPress plugins for the functionality your business needs. With a WordPress.com plan, expert support is there to help you focus on what matters, growing your business. 28% of all websites run on WordPress. 28%. Create your WordPress.com site and you'll see why. Get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase. Go to WordPress.com/Twitch to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's WordPress.com/TWICH for 15% off your brand new website. And we thank WordPress for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Goodness. Some new Nooks from Intel, Dawson Canyon Nooks with 15-watt Kaby Lake CPUs. Basically, last year, the Baby Canyon Nook kits came out, and now Intel's launching the Dawson Canyon Nooks powered by 15-watt Kaby Lake processors. I like Tim Berry's line, quote, despite Dawson Canyon sounding more dramatic than Baby Canyon, the new Nooks are lower powered and ditch Iris graphics and USB 3.1 Type-C, which is probably not a big loss for the mass majority of Nook users. Six new models, three flavors, bare bones, a slim case kit, and a taller kit that's got room for a 2.5-inch drive. They're going to have either a Core i3 or Core i5 processor. Dawson Canyon supports Intel rapid storage technology and Optane memory, so you can play around with some performance boost opportunities there. Core i3 7100U 2.4 gigahertz and Core i5 7300U 3.4 gigahertz boosted processors. Dual cores, hyper-threading, 3 megabytes of cache, Intel HD Graphics 620, and again, 15-watt TDPs. These are not high-performance machines, but these are quiet, cool, you know, two-core, four-thread boxes that probably not be as expensive as some of the Nooks we've seen. Four USB 3.0 ports, a gigabit Ethernet port, and two HDMI outputs, one with protected UHD. They're going to be shipping the tail end of 2017. Pricing is not currently available. So
right.
I assume they will be somewhat less emotionally traumatic than some of the other Nooks we've seen, but I could be horrendously wrong about that one. Lee Garbutt got hands-on with a Seasonic Focus Plus Platinum 550-watt power supply units. Is it awesome?
The key here is just they're getting a platinum rating in a relatively low wattage power supply, right? Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Also relatively compact, right? But so yeah, some people that want to run a lower power system, like a lower wattage requirement system, would also still want to be really efficient. Usually those are kind of contradictory, right? Usually you get more efficient at generally speaking, and like it's easier to do with like putting some of the higher power output units tend to go into the platinum range because that's where you'd really care more about being more efficient because you're putting less heat out from the power supply. But now they're kind of, the platinum rating is kind of moving down into the lower end of the spectrum there as far as your power output. So $100 for a 550-watt platinum rated power supply. And of course, Lee did all of his, all of his detailed tests that he does on a power supply. So the rating, what was the max rating he got? So at 275 watt draw, which is actually a pretty, reasonable spot for a typical system that's not kind of like a power user system, 92.5% efficiency. That's pretty good. And that's on 120 volt source. So if you're overseas and you get one of these and you use it on a 240 volt supply, the efficiency actually goes even higher, I think.
Nothing wrong with that. It's some people might say it's a little expensive, but again, it's 80 plus platinum. Build quality should be outstanding. 80 plus platinum rated, and then 550 watts continuous DC output at up to 50 degrees Celsius, which is 122-ish degrees, should you be thinking in Fahrenheit instead of Celsius. 10-year warranty. Again, we are seeing a bunch of power supplies that are being over-engineered and given particularly amazing warranties. So
yep.
I am all with having a power supply that creates no issues for me. So if you're looking for something, and it's funny, I was going to say 550 watts for $99.90 USD on Newegg, topping out at 850 watts for $140. So
yeah.
Lots of options.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You can find cheaper 550 watt power supplies out there, but not as well efficiency rated and with not as long of a warranty. So
10 years.
So, you get what you pay for.
Hopefully. You get what you pay for.
Usually. Yeah.
One last thought before we go. Another article about Tim Very. Philips. I love the ultra wide monitors. Dell U3415W is my standard desktop model. Philips revealed this beast, a 49-inch ultra wide monitor. It's going to come out late in 2018, second half of 2018. The Philips 492P8 with a 32:9 aspect ratio. Essentially built on the same panel as Samsung's CH90 QLED, looking at an MSRP of $1,077. And that's a significant price reduction over that Samsung CH90 because they've eliminated FreeSync 2. They've eliminated Samsung's QLED backlighting. We don't know what the refresh rate is going to be. We don't know if it's going to support high dynamic range. But you're talking about a 49-inch, 3840x1080 monitor with an 1800R curvature. I would be very curious to see what that looks like because that's a very tight curvature to me, but it's also a very, very wide monitor. And the pixels are going to be fairly expansive. 3840x1080 on a 49-inch monitor. Not that you're going to be noticing them if you're playing games, but I think it's going to be a very interesting one to take a look at. 600 candelas per meter squared for the maximum brightness. DisplayPort, HDMI, VGA, USB Type-C display inputs. 2-port USB 3.0 hub. It's an interesting monitor, right? 32:9, big, 49 inches. One of the notes at the bottom of it is, would you put a 49-inch, 34-pound monitor on your desk? And why didn't they at least go to 1,200 pixels on the vertical resolution? I was kind of surprised that they did 1080p by 3840 on a monitor this big. But, that may have been what the glass was available and affordable for that installation.
And the one thing that's a question mark is we don't know what the refresh rate is. We think it might be 144. If it is, then okay, kind of. You know, we're kind of like wondering like who really wants this panel, right? Because it's the vertical resolution is only 1080. It could be gamers that are used to doing dual panel gaming and they just don't want the bezel down the center, you know, like that sort of thing. That could be a use case. Also, it's worth noting if you can do 144 hertz refresh, if you're playing like VSync off anyway, 144, it gets pretty hard to see tears once you're that fast, right? So, you know, the really higher refresh rate displays, it almost gets to the point where FreeSync and G-Sync don't give you nearly as much of a benefit as they do, you know, with lower refresh rate panels. There's still a benefit, but just it's becomes less noticeable. And that's just coming from someone who's usually picky about that sort of thing and is usually sitting in front of these panels, like testing them out with G-Sync and FreeSync, just enabled and disabled a lot. Just for kind of panel testing that we do in-house, right? so, yeah, interesting. You know, we might take a look at it at some point. We'll have to see.
I would not be surprised.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to wrap this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. Are there any exciting advances in storage that are coming up maybe for review on PC Purser?
There's nothing I can talk about. I'd love to talk about them, but I can't talk about them yet.
But you'd never get the whatever they are again from the companies again.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness.
Really want to talk about them?
Oh, my goodness. We got not too in-depth, but we talked a bunch about what to do if you are one of the 143 million Americans potentially affected by the break-in at Equifax this week. Shannon got hands-on with Razer's Basilisk mouse, literally so new it was shipped to her direct from the warehouse in China. And, of course, we talked a whole bunch about what's going on with iPhone 10, Apple TV. And one of my favorite spiels I've written in a long time, getting exFAT drives, universal drives, getting universal exFAT formatted drives to work on Linux. We walk you through everything you need to know to get those running on your Linux machine in this episode of Tech Thing up at techthing.com.
And, I wasn't aware that exFAT was a tricky thing in this day and age on Linux.
Well, you know, it depends on whether or not Fuse has been installed on your system. Sudo apt-get. Maybe
there's always a trick.
There's always some trick. Well, I mean, essentially, Microsoft owns exFAT, and there's some pretty restrictive licensing on that. So Microsoft, they got it in Windows. Apple's got it in OS X. Linux, not so much. So in terms of the primary distributions, but something there to look at. Robert Heron and I on AVXL this week go a little bit nuts because we were at Cedia on Friday. So we saw all the new 4K projectors. We saw some really nice screens. We saw a whole bunch of new speakers from Kef and Elac and Definitive. And that episode should be up tomorrow. That was a fun day. A long day because we both took the same like 5:50 a.m. flight out of Oakland down to San Diego. But man, there were some gorgeous screens down there, including what I think is one of the most practical HDTVs I've seen in a long time, which is from Samsung. They call it the Frame, which is essentially an HDTV with a swappable wooden frame around it, so it looks like art. And they did a whole bunch of really interesting things to make art look more realistic on this screen. But the best part about it is it's not 3 millimeters thick. It doesn't cost $10 billion. And you can change it with your decor if you're the kind of person that wants decor changing opportunities. But we talk about a lot more than that on this week's AVXL. With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on This Week in Computer Hardware. I suspect there will be a whole bunch more hardware news next week that we can't talk about just yet. So if you're not subscribed already, do us a favor. Go to twit.tv/TWICH. That is twit.tv/Twitch. You get all of our older episodes. You get information on how to subscribe. You get links to Ryan and I. And we want to thank you for joining us on the adventure that is Twitch. And I want to thank you for joining us today, Mr. Malvin Tano, in Ryan's place. Thank you, sir.
See you guys, you know. I would say on the next one, but that'll be Ryan.
Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Malvin Tano.
And I, at least, will see you next week on Twitch.